In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's coolest conversations time in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. I'll be checking in today with Steve Diggle, founding member of Buzzcocks. He played bass on their very first recordings and switched to guitar shortly thereafter with the departure of bandmate Howard Devoto. He remained in the lineup with Pete Shelley, and he has led the band since Shelley's passing in 2018. Earlier this year, they released their second album without Pete. It's titled Attitude Adjustment, and it features our recent coolest song of the world, Poetic Machine Gun. Let's give a listen to a tad of it, and then I'll be back with Steve for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Well, I'm asking you why you won't even try to light my poetic machine gun. Shoots in the sky, could make you high. My poetic machine gun. Oh, my poetic machine gun.
Manfred here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and my guest today for our coolest conversations is Steve Diggle of the English punk rock band Buzzcocks. He was the bassist initially when they formed back in 1976, but after Howard Devoto departed, switched over to guitar, and with member Pete Shelley, they wound up issuing 9 albums. And since the passing of Pete in 2018, Steve has led the band with a 2022 album released called Sonics and the Soul, and this year with their latest, it's Attitude Adjustment, and that features our coolest song in the world this week, Poetic Machine Gun. How are you, Steve?
I'm good, thanks. Yes, we've been very busy touring. We was in Poland a few days ago, and we're off to headline a festival in Spain in a few days.
Well, you know, I feel like I should have greeted you with an Ahoy Matey, because last I saw you was on the Little Stephen's Underground Garage cruise this year back in April.
That's great. And how great was that cruise? It was really good.
Well, I was going to ask you, you must have had a great time because you're going to be sailing on next year's cruise. Have you ever played on cruises before?
We did one with Flogging Molly many years ago. And we did one from Barcelona to Sardinia, but not many. But I never thought, you know, you never envisaged years ago when we started out we'd be playing on boats, you know, and cruises.
No.
The great thing about it is it becomes like a rock and roll family, doesn't it? You know, you get to know everybody on the boat.
I was going to say that's the special thing, a great sense of community.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there's bands playing everywhere, you know, in the casinos and all over the boat. So got to check a load of things out, you know. I love that guy that was like Jerry Lee Lewis. I think he said he was the cousin.
Yeah, I cannot think of his name, but I first was in this artist lounge, and he was setting up a piano, and he was asking if there was like a Nord on board, you know, the keyboard, and I was like, I don't know. And then the next thing I knew, he was ripping it up.
Yeah, he was great. You know, I mean, there's a lot of that vibe going around the boat. You kind of got the headliners and the main stages and you know, the indoor stage, which I enjoyed as well, because we was kind of asked to do like B-sides or something different from the regular set we was going to do. So we did that as well. And Mike Mills from REM was watching that. He loved it, you know, when you bring the more obscure stuff in. And, you know, we did some songs of Sonics in the Soul we've never actually played, you know. And so that was great as well. There's a lot of variety. And it just ties in with the vibe, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know on next year's boat, they got The Damned, Glenn Matlock, Stiff Little Fingers are all playing. Next year's cruise, let me say, is April the 24th to the 28th, and it goes from Miami to Puerto Plata in the Dominican Republic. Are you familiar with all those guys, the guys in The Damned and everything? Yeah.
We go back a long way, most of those guys, yeah, you know. Obviously, we started, when we started, the Damned started back in 76, 77, and of course, Glenn Matlock with the Pistols. And I kind of known Stiff Little Fingers over the years. I mean, they came a little later on the scene, but they've been around a long time. So, you know, that would be like an inbuilt family in itself, a family within this family. It's kind of a good lineup.
I read that your first show with the Buzzcocks was opening up for the Sex Pistols way back in July of 1976 in Manchester. Did you meet Glenn Matlock then, or did you guys kind of...
Yeah, we met them all then. I mean, what happened was, I think it was Howard or Pete, I think it was Howard, he was on like some college trip to London because we were based in Manchester. And yeah. He was on a college trip and there's this sort of band playing in a basement somewhere in some club. And he said, you know, if you come to Manchester, we'll kind of put a poster up for you and sort you a gig there. And that's what happened. And all the press came down to that gig to review the Pistols. And they was amazed that there was a band from Manchester called the Buzzcocks on there. They couldn't believe it. And also, that was the first time, really, the Sex Pistols got reviewed in the press. And also for us. So I always say, if Jesus was born in Bethlehem, maybe punk on the British side started in Manchester because of all the press reviews, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It was a magical night, and it was like, you know, the punk thing in Britain at that time was kind of like brand new, you know. From that gig, I mean, the whole thing set off like a carpet bomb, you know. We was big fans of Ramones, and their album came out about a month before we actually put our record out. But so that was very influential, the Ramones record, you know.
Well, I kind of hear that Ramones vibe on Poetic Machine Gun. It's got that, you know, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, thing that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yes. But, yeah, that's more of a return to it than I've ever done, really. But, yeah, great acknowledgement to it. You're right.
I want to talk about that song and the album in a moment, but I wanted to ask you, one more thing, sort of a background thing. I was wondering about this. I read online that when you were growing up as a teenager, I guess, that you identified as being a mod. Is that true?
Well, yeah. I mean, what happened was my cousin lived a couple of doors down. He had Little Richard, Chuck Berry, and Elvis Presley and stuff, which I loved. But I was just coming up from about 7 years old when the Beatles started. And then, so it was like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Who, the Kinks. Bob Dylan I heard when I was seven, and that was a big influence. He's as much a punk to me as any punk out there, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I kind of heard all that 60s stuff. As a, you know, I was the right age for, you know, hearing all that 60s stuff. So that's when I came, you know, in London, there was the kind of Carnaby Street mod and, you know, the kind of dandy clothes, really, and the sort of that 60s look. So that's why I was a kind of, you know, mod, you know.
did you have any of those kind of dandy threads? Those did you ever get an outfit from Carnaby?
Yeah, I like the suits and the polka dot shirts and all that kind of thing. I mean, we've got to remember David Bowie was a kind of mod before, and so was Rod Stewart. I mean, I think it kind of comes around all that stuff, and then you kind of, you move on from there a little bit. But, you know, it was a magic period, that 60s, for the music. And we took that, and by the time we'd heard, like, the MC5 and the Stooges and the Velvet Underground, you know, I mean, that was very influential to us as well, you know. But, yeah, you know, all that early 60s mix, that's why I was a kind of mod. I had the scooters and stuff like that, you know.
Did you have a scooter?
Oh, yeah. I had three at one time. I had one with the mirrors, you know.
All right.
I had to have one with the mirrors. They used to rattle all over the place, so when you got a lot of mirrors on there. But they look kind of glamorous, you know.
Yes.
And, you know, I had a couple of other ones as well. One with a kind of racing seat on it. And two Lambrettas and a Vespa, you know.
All right.
So that was kind of cool when I was 16, you know. And also, when I got the scooters, I started listening to a lot of soul music as well, you know. I mean, little Stevie Wonder had come out in 1965 and Smokey Robinson, all these people. So that kind of tied in with the mod thing as well, because it was very much into soul and reggae and ska. So that was going on as well in the 60s, which influenced me also, you know.
Well, you were, let's see, about around 21 when the Buzzcocks get started. And you joining the band was a pretty great career move, as it turns out. If not for that, if you weren't, the Buzzcocks didn't happen, is there any reflection on whereabouts you may have landed? Do you think you would have been playing music anyway, or would you have pursued something else, do you think?
Well, I was, when I met the other Buzzcocks, I was forming my own band anyway, you know. I was going to make a band like The Who, smash the guitars and tell the audience to fuck off. That was my mix before I knew about the Sex Pistols or where they were going. I arranged to meet a guy in Manchester, and I met Malcolm McLennan, and he introduced me to Pete Howard. So that's how we all met, you know. It's a strange twist of fate.
And a good twist of fate.
Absolutely, yeah. So the guy I was supposed to meet and the guy they were supposed to meet, they could be still waiting there now. Somebody's better tell them it's not going to happen. So, yeah, it was a case of misunderstanding how we kind of met, really, or how I met the other two. And but it worked out. Like I say, it was fate and destiny somehow. If it wasn't that, maybe I would be a serial killer. You know, they're pretty famous in their own right, you know.
Right. Well, yes.
But I'm glad I took the guitar, really. You know,
you know, exactly. That's a better axe to sling than one to chop people up with, yeah.
Yeah. And then when we started, you see, so I was on the bass for, I did 10 shows within a couple of months. Howard left and I moved over to the guitar, and that was my rightful place, really. And for 50 years, I've been doing the guitar, you know. You know, that works out right as well, you know.
Wanted to ask you a question about songwriting and then kind of move into the album here. And you wrote Harmony in My Head, which was a hit for the band back in like 1979. Over these ensuing 40 plus years, has anything changed with how you approach songwriting?
Well, every time you're trying to look something new at it. I mean, my first song was Fast Cars for Buzzcocks, and then Autonomy. I've actually written 100 songs for Buzzcocks. It's, man, you're over 50 years. It's a lot, but it sounds a lot when you say 100, but, you know, over 50 years, it's... you know, I did all the music on Why Can't I Touch It, and Pete did the chorus, the words, so... And the song Promises, I had a song Promises about the government, and he said, will you sing this one? So he changed the words to a kind of love emotional song. So if we ever wrote any together, it was kind of like that, really, you know, which complement each other and stuff. But then a lot of this stuff, it was like, you know, this is my song, I better sing this one, and you sing those. So with Harmony in My Head, I wanted a really tough song on that. I thought... We've had these kind of catchy pop ones. And we were doing the Top of the Pops television program where I think we was in the charts about 8 or 10 times. And I thought, now we're in with these chart people, let's have this this freight train coming at you, a song called Harmony in My Head, you know. you know, let's step up from the pop ones. And I thought, this will give, like, you know, like the Pistols, Anarchy in UK, Run for X Money, that kind of thing, you know. But also, I remember when I spoke to Kurt Cobain about this, you know, we did the last Nirvana tour, and he loved the vocal, and I said, I smoked 20 cigarettes to get that vocal. The producer tried to get me to sing it, and I wanted to shout it, like Little Richard, and like John Lennon on Twist and Shout, because I believe John Lennon's voice was kind of gone when he was doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. He was, I believe he was ill at the time, and his voice was really ragged out, but they kept pushing it, yeah.
Yeah, they'd kind of done the album in a day or 24 hours, wasn't it, their first album, and his voice was... But, you know, I wanted that guttural sound on it, which I got, you know. And, of course, Kurt Cobain loved it, and you hear his voice, you can see why I loved Harmony in My Head, you know. So, yeah, and then, you know, many other songs along the way, really, on the different albums. Bringing us up to Sandy Peake going, and then Sonics and the Soul, you know.
Right. Well, let's talk some about Attitude Adjustment. You have 14 tracks on there in total. It came out earlier this year, and it features our coolest song in the world this week, Poetic Machine Gun. Now, I've read that you wrote that like an early 2025 last year during a break from a touring schedule. Is that right? Is that when you wrote it?
Yeah. What happened was, we, over the last couple of years, we've done 90 shows a year, and it came up to last year, it came up to sort of Christmas time, December. And then it was during January, I wrote the whole album within about 4 weeks. And then I think in February, we actually had just enough time to record it. And we recorded it within maybe over a period of 3 to 4 weeks on and off, because I think we've done a couple of shows. I remember we finished that on the Friday. We mastered it at Abbey Road Studios in London here, the Beatles studio. And then I was on the plane on a Monday coming to the States. So... then again, it was like that classic 60s, right? Bands in the 60s were always on their own, bands like the Beatles and the Stones. And so in between, you had to kind of write the albums and get back on the road, you know, write and record it. So I kind of like that as well, because the Sonics and the Soul one was like, it'd been out for just 2 years. And I thought, if we can bring another one out, and let's keep the journey going, you know, because, you know, it's always great to follow a band or an artist on the journey, really, and see where it goes, you know. It's and you never know what you're going to get. So I tried to make some surprises on this, you know. You kind of bring the thread of Buzzcocks with you, but trying to go for Nick Lavenues, as we always kind of did with Buzzcocks on the albums, really. But... that's what I try to do with Attitude Adjustment. That's one of the reasons it was called Attitude Adjustment, you know. It gives you leeway to, you know, do different things as well, you know.
Well, right. Well, let me ask you about, like, Poetic Machine Gun. So let's think about this one. You know, Woody Guthrie's guitar famously had the words, "This machine kills fascists," you know, on it. Your Poetic Machine Gun, what is that capable of doing?
Well, it's about words, really, you know.
Right.
One, in a world of words, there's not that much communication with everybody around the world, particularly politically, but also, you know, just in general, because everybody's on their iPhones or something. But also, it's about relationships as well. My point of machine gun, she doesn't like my words, you know. So it's touching on freedom of speech, and also in relationships, you know, you might be with some girl and the other line is she thinks it's so absurd, you know, doesn't like your opinions about things or what you're saying, you know. It's that human condition relation thing on the love scale, and on the others scale, it's like... like I say, you know, in a world of words, the lack of communication, you know. So, and also, there's another playful bit to it, you know. Let's imagine it's Shakespeare for a bit. And, so, we've kind of got those two scenarios going there. But then the poetic machine gun could be the appendage, in between your legs, you know what I mean? That could be, if we're looking at symbolically, it could, I'm asking you why.
A lot of symbolism.
You don't like my poetic machine gun, you know? So I thought, you know, I kind of like the openness that it's not just one literal thing. It's been viewed as a few things.
Right, multi-layered.
Yeah, that's the sexual raw root of it, that, you know, your poetic machine gun, but also it's the, the use of words and the meanings and the communication. Yeah.
Well, you know, another favorite track on the album for me is the opener, Queen of the Scene. And I love that line you have about trying to get to heaven in a suicide machine. When did you write that? And what's the story behind Queen of the Scene?
When it was all written together, is that, you know, in that few weeks. Really, Queen of the Scene started with, so you're flicking through the channels on the TV, and there's all these reality TV shows, you know.
Yeah.
Big Brother, Love Island, you know, people in rooms, they all start off nice and they all end up either arguing or, and they're all vying for attention. So we got a lot of these reality shows over here, as you do there. And I thought, if you fell to earth and you switch the TV on, do you think, is this the human condition? People arguing in rooms or in bikinis on islands? And who are these people? So it's like a little take on that, really. And also, they all want to be the queen of the, you know, of the reality show, you know. And you've got the gender thing and all that kind of thing as well, you know. And so it was kind of just like, let's write about that, you know. And kind of what happens is when they go on those shows, over here particularly, they're usually in the papers going, it ruined my life. I've never been the same since I've been on there. Or the Andy Warhol 15 Minutes of Fame has gone, and they go into self-destructive mode. That's the bit, trying to get to heaven in a suicide machine.
I got it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure when you read the press over there about the reality shows, that they always come out of it worse than they went in, you know. It's just the state of human condition, and I thought, this is what we're seeing, really, on our television screens. And it was just kind of going, really? Who are those kind of people? But the album, I mean, it all ties in. The album Attitude Adjustment, what I realised when I recorded it was mainly this one's like a lot of social observation. This television thing, the words and communication in the world with Bartek Machine Gun. But I got one, Jesus at the Wheel, because there was a guy in the Piccadilly Circus, the centre of London, going, you know, the end of the world is nigh, you know, Jesus, all that kind of thing. There's a song called All Gone to War.
Right.
On there, which, you know, there's been wars in the Ukraine and Gaza, you know, everywhere. And I was just singing on that, nobody should die, that's all, you know. That's what he was saying on that. But there's a lot of social observation on it all, really. And there's one called The Greatest of Them All at the end, which was about the homeless, about a girl I knew in Camden in London that was living in a doorway, you know. And I used to say, don't worry, one day you'll be the greatest of them all, you know. Sadly, she died in that doorway.
And how long ago was that?
That was like 2 years ago, you know. I didn't know a person. Well, I knew her because I'd passed that doorway where she used to sleep, you know, in the evenings. Yeah. And you just say hello or give her a few books or whatever. But, you know, there's many homeless everywhere. So that stuck in my mind. But they're all kind of social observations, really.
Well, then tell me about Heavy Streets.
Yeah,
that is, I mean, musically, it's got, I mean, almost this kind of clash ish kind of vibe, or even David Bowie, maybe.
Yeah.
Where are these heavy streets? Your observations of these heavy streets?
They're everywhere, you know. I remember going to New York in 1977, and that was heavy, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, it says, lost my phone and lost my mind down those heavy streets. Over here, like a phone gets stolen every few seconds, you know. I think in London over last year or so, it's like 600 phones a week get stolen, you know.
Yeah.
So it's mainly about that, really. It's kind of like a British mean street. but, you know, and people get mugged and robbed in the States and everywhere else around the world. And a lot of it, you know, there's a lot of phone stealing. So I put it, and there's been a lot of knife attacks over here. I mean, every week there's lots of them, you know.
So you mean people trying to stab each other with knives?
Oh, kids, they're doing it all the time, the gangs over here. Every week there's quite a lot of cases, and I know it happens in the States. I mean, all these are universal subjects.
Well, no, here we just shoot them.
Right. Well, maybe that's the answer. That's true, you have the guns there as well, yeah. So it's just talking about that, really, you know, having your phone stolen or getting shot or stabbed down those heavy streets, you know, and it has got a bit of that, I don't know, it's going to get a bit of heavy Velvet Underground or reggae thing, and it's got a bit of Bowie in it as well there as well, hasn't
that's
it?
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah. Somehow that's seeped into it, but it's the way I'm singing it, you know. But I thought you've got to sing it heavy as well, you know. But if it's a nod to David Bowie, it can't be too bad, can it, you know. But, yeah, that was a serious subject, Heavy Streets. So it's kind of like a Charles Dickens novel where they all had characters in there, this album. Or like what Ray Davies from The Kinks might do. He had characters and scenarios. I mean, I didn't set out to do that, but what I realised, it's all what I'd absorbed over a period of time, you know, what's going around in the world at the moment. Or
well, let me ask you about one more then, Just a Dream, that's got allusions, number of allusions to suicide, as does Queen of the Scene. But is that...
Well, that's the dream we're all told as well, you know. We're all like, as soon as we're born, we're like a donkey chasing a carrot on a stick, you know. And it's just going to say, it's just, whatever happens in life, it's all gone tomorrow. It was just the dream I followed, you know. You've got the American dream, you know, it's all dreams about everything. And, but sometimes those dreams are nightmares. And people go through a lot to chase that dream, you know. People go through a lot in their mind to think they'll be happy someday or something, like completely. I mean, the philosopher Schopenhauer said, if we're all happy 24 hours, we'd all be delirious. That wouldn't work.
Well, overall, let me ask you then, overall yourself, are you happy?
Well, yeah, but I know I can get sad as well. You know, you've got to be quick to deal with both. I wouldn't like to be happy for 24 hours every day, 24/7. Like he said, you know, we're all good, but we'd all be crazy that way, you know.
Ooh, right.
So you have to accept the human condition and the, you know, then you learn more from your mistakes and your knockbacks than you do from, like, the success and the good things, really. You know, that stuff that really hits your mind and soul is sometimes when life comes at you like a truck, you know, and knocks you about, you know.
Well, I think that's well put, right?
Yeah, you know, everybody can relate to that kind of thing, you know. So with Just a Dream I Followed, it's that really, you know. But, you know, the worst thing is at night as well, you kind of wake up and everything's bad, but it's all, the dream's gone tomorrow, it's a new day, you know. That's what he's kind of saying. And on the other level, it's like we're all being sold this dream that really is almost impossible, but it's a nice idea. It's just being aware of this dream, really.
So you played this cruise earlier this year, and you'll play next year, and I see that you're scheduled to play some more shows here in the U.S. It's like 10 shows from September the 24th to October the 6th. That includes CBGB's festival in New York on September the 26th. And other cities on the tour include Philadelphia, Buffalo, Columbus, Detroit, Chicago, and others. Over the years, you've certainly played the U.S. a number of times. Is there anything typical to American audiences that's notably different from other places in the world that you play?
Oh, yeah. I think the first time we came was, I think, 77 or 78, maybe. The thing is, Americans like to rock. They know the rock and roll. I mean, that's where it comes from, you know. The British people were, you know, kind of sold it back to you guys. But we loved it. And we loved it and put another twist on it and said, what do you think of that, you know? But, you know, America's built for rock and roll. And the day I stepped off the plane in the first gig, I remember Pete Townsend saying, when you go to America, you've got to be bigger than better than you are in Britain. You know, you've got to become more larger than life. And I kind of like that. And the first time we went there, two nights at the Irving Plaza, with the Ramones in attendance, they'd come and see us, which was a great honour. And I just remember rocking out two nights at the Irving Plaza. Then we went on to the Santa Monica Civic in L.A., America welcomed us. I think it somehow you touch a nerve with people, and they kind of got what we're doing. They realised we weren't bullshitting, and we were singing from the heart and soul, you know. And we were singing like real people, you know. We weren't singing about anything that they wouldn't understand, or they haven't been through themselves in a lot of ways, you know. And there's something about that, I think, that people relate the Buzzcocks songs to. It's, you know, it's the artist reflecting the mirror. It's like, look, we've heard that too, you know. I get that, you know. And when you can share that kind of thing, you know. I mean, it's to say to Pete, sometimes we'd be in bars. We used to have an office, but it used to be crowded, so we'd go to a bar across the road. But I said, it was like them French philosophers where they'd sit outside the bars in Paris, you know, Picasso, Jean-Paul Sartre, and discuss, you know, philosophy, or, you know, just discuss everything about the human condition. And I think sometimes maybe that comes out of the speakers. You know? It's me. It was me and him then, and it's me now. Discussing that with the listener sometimes, you know. But also, it's also got to be about inspiration. That's where the fast tunes come in and the, you know, to inspire people, really. That's the greatest thing you can do, you know. I'd inspire myself. I'd inspire, you know, the people that you can get through anything in life. You can embrace it, you know. Just like like Ernest Hemingway or something. You've got to grab life by the horns and take it somewhere.
Well, we can hear one more tune, and we're going to take a listen to another track off of Attitude Adjustment, the album from this year. And I'd like us to hear Break That Ball and Chain. And, man, it's got such a really cool groove to it. Reminds me of something that maybe like Eddie Grant or the Equals might have done, that the bass line is way cool in that. Are you an Equals fan at all?
Oh, love the Equals, yeah. But like I said, I grew up with all the Motown stuff and all the soul stuff. So what happened with that song? So I thought, over the years, we've played Detroit, and the Motown studios, it was always closed on Monday for like 20 years or more, ever since. We must have always played in Detroit on a Sunday because it was always closed Monday. So 2 years ago, we got to Detroit to do the show, and the next day the studio was open. So I'm in there with Smokey Robinson, Diana Ross, Stevie Wonder, you know, got to do the tour of Motown Studio. So I came out and I thought, I've got to write a song with that classic Motown beat, the drums, and get the bass. And, you know, as a kid, I was, you know, grew up with all this kind of stuff as well as rock and roll. It was the soul thing. And I thought, it's going to have that classic drum beat and let's do a really great bass line and stuff. And then I thought, I pulled a lot of it back in the studio and I thought, I've got to make it a bit of avant-garde as well, like a Buzzcocks song. So it's got little clicky guitars and I was pulling faders down and put that break to make it sound modern. And so that goes down a storm at the gigs. That goes well. But it all come for me finally getting into the Motown studio. And I thought the message is great. You know, we've all got a ball and chain tied to us in our lives. You know, you've got to break that ball and chain, you know, and find that life you need, you know. It's a message of hope, just like the great Motown records were, you know.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, Steve, thank you so much for talking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
It's been a pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm really looking forward to getting back on that boat again because that's so special. You know, Steve Van Zandt, you know, he's started the greatest radio station. And also, I mean, we listened to it all the time when we were there. And these boat cruises, you know, the choice of acts and the whole vibe on it, it's something else. It's something really special, right? You know, you can play the halls and the festivals, but that boat thing, you know, it becomes that community and everybody's there for the music. And you're walking around that boat and there's music everywhere.
Everywhere. Every nook and cranny. Every nook and cranny.
Yeah, it's just... We loved it so much, you know. We love it. And we're really looking forward to it this time.
Well, let's give that, let's give your tune a listen. It's Break That Ball and Chain from the Buzzcocks off their latest album, Attitude Adjustment, in Little Steven's Underground Garage. And Little Steven's Underground Garage with Break That Ball and Chain. Songs off their latest album, Attitude Adjustment. And this is the Mighty Manfred. Thanks again to the band Steve Diggle for being my guest today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. Brazilian group Banda AL9. They've just issued their debut U.S. album. It's titled Hey Hey, We're Banda AL9. It's out on Wicked Cool Records. And the band features the brothers Tiago and Mateus Curry. The former will join me next time around to tell us all about the new release. That's your next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.